The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, how about them Cowboys, motherfuckers? Oh, yeah. You know, I haven't had a show since Monday night, you know, when the Cowboys kicked the shit out of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 31-14. So guess what, y'all? We are recapping that game because, I mean, we would be recapping it anyways, but with the Cowboys motherfucking win, you best believe we are going to be talking about that shit because, whew, we haven't seen a Dallas Cowboys playoff game like that in so fucking long. It was just spectacular. The Cowboys dominated this game from start to finish. There wasn't one point of this game that Tom Brady was coming back in this one. They didn't have anything going as I expected them to, but I mean, this Cowboys team just stepped it the fuck up. So as I said, the Cowboys got the win 31-14, and it was just complete Dallas domination from start to finish. I mean, the first couple of drives, they were three and outs for both teams. But then once the Cowboys got it going, Dak Prescott had his best game as a Dallas Cowboy. And I said it at the beginning of the season, I was giving Dak this year. And if he did not succeed this year, and when I say succeed, he did not need to win a Super Bowl. He just needs to show me that he's capable of winning a Super Bowl. And so far, dude has proved it. Thank you, Dak, for proving you are not Tony Romo. You are not Tony Romo, and I thank you for that shit, because Tony Romo never did what Dak Prescott did in this motherfucking playoff game. Dak went 25 for 33, 305 yards, 4 passing touchdowns, and 1 rushing touchdown. The dude was money. He just was on point with every fucking pass. It was just beautiful to see. Dalton Schultz had 2 touchdowns. C.D. Lamb had 1 touchdown, 1 wide open ass touchdown. The ground attack got it going. The defense held it down. Like, the defense made Tom Brady look old. And I don't say that because, you know, Tom Brady, at the end of the day, doesn't matter how this season ended up for him, dude still looks like he could play. So I would not be shocked if he does not retire at the end of the season. Obviously, we don't know what he's going to do, but it's not due to his play if he retires. But in this game, the Dallas Cowboys defense made dude look old, and it was fucking fantastic. Finally, the Cowboys have never beat Tom Brady in his entire career, and as I said, I was so hoping we'd finally get that win, and not only did we get the win, but it was a playoff game, and we kicked the shit out of the Bucks, and Tom Brady looked like an old-ass motherfucker in this game, and it was fucking fantastic. But I will say, one of the things that I respect most about Tom Brady is that he never gives up, and even when this game was completely out of reach for the Buccaneers, he still drove this team down the field. He still scored some points. He had that look in his eye like, I'm going to give you a good drive. Regardless of how this game ends, I'm not giving up. So that's just what I've always respected about the dude, is that, like, no matter what, he never gives up. He does not bitch out. Like, you know, lots of teams, when it's completely out of reach, you could tell they've just phoned it in. Tom Brady does not phone it in. So shout out to him for just still being that dude. Now, of course, after this game, of course, it's what's going to go on with Tom Brady's future. And I mean, who knows? He's got his options open. There are a few teams that are saying they're going to go hard after him in the offseason. But I don't know. Who knows? He might actually retire, but I wouldn't be shocked to see him stay. Also of note in this game, over 30 million people watched this game. So lots of people were watching the Dallas Cowboys kick some motherfucking ass, and part one of what I was hoping was going to happen for the Cowboys in this postseason happened. My hope for the postseason with the Cowboys was, first, I wanted Tom Brady. I wanted us to win. And not only did we win, we kicked ass. So there's part one right there. Then I was hoping we'd get revenge on the 49ers. And that's coming up this weekend. We will talk more about that game, of course, once we get to the divisional round. But predictions, but that's what I wanted. I wanted to get revenge on the 49ers, so that's up next. Then I wanted us to make the NFC Championship game and beat the Eagles. I'm cool with us beating the Giants, but I really wanted us to beat the Eagles, so that's attainable. And then I wanted us to get to the Super Bowl and beat Patrick Mahomes. That's my hope, and so far the Cowboys knocked out round number one. Let's see what happens in round number two, if we can knock out the San Francisco 49ers. But how about them Cowboys? That was such a fun game. As a Cowboys fan, it has never felt better to watch that game, because you know it's just folly after folly, and we just barely hang on to games. Nah, this was a fucking fantastic playoff game to watch, and hopefully there is more to come. Because I'm still feeling good about the Cowboys this week. You know, I started off Monday's show saying I'm feeling good as a Cowboys fan. It felt like we've turned a corner. Still feeling that way coming up. So let's talk about the divisional round. We have some excellent matchups this week, beginning with the first matchup on Saturday night, the Jacksonville Jaguars at the Kansas City Chiefs. Right now, the Chiefs are an 8.5-point favorite. You know, Jacksonville, they've really stepped it up. And as I said, with Doug Peterson, he's got them on the right course. I feel like they're going to be a force to reckon with for the next couple of seasons. But this season, you know, that was a huge win they got last week against the Chargers, down 27-0 at one point and just chipped away at that lead, just stuck to their game plan. But unfortunately for them, they're playing the Kansas City Chiefs off of a bye week. And if there's anything you ever want to bet on that usually is money, that is usually Andy Reid off of a bye week. And that goes for when he was the Philadelphia Eagles coach and still reigns true as a Kansas City Chiefs coach. Now, he has lost a few of these, but it's just pretty, I think he's only lost like 3, 4, or 5, something like, it's a low number of amount of games that Andy Reid coached teams have lost after a bye week. So I just feel like, you know, the Chiefs, they're coming off of a bye week. They're at home. And while I do think the Jaguars are probably going to make this an interesting game, I feel like they're going to start to lose grip in the second half. And I just feel like, you know, Patrick Mahomes, he's having an MVP season. Like I said, the Chiefs are coming off of a bye week. So I feel like the Chiefs are pretty much going to dominate this game from start to finish. And I have the Chiefs winning this one 31-20. Then the Saturday night game is the New York Giants at the Philadelphia Eagles. Right now, the Eagles are a 7.5-point favorite, which I think is pretty high. I do think the Eagles are a far superior team than the Giants. But this is the third time these two teams have faced off against each other. This is a division opponent. Division opponents are always tricky, and anything can happen in these games. And actually, the last game they played, it was the last week of the season, and the Giants played all of their second stringers in that game, and they actually made it a pretty decent game. Philly barely hung on in that one, so I mean, we'll see what happens in this one. I do expect the Giants to give it their all, but the Giants, they just don't have a lot going on offensively. They can tread water and keep it close, and then the defense, they've really turned it on the last like 2 months of the season. The defense has looked really fucking good. But offensively, they don't have a lot of spark. Saquon Barkley, you know, he started off the season very hot, but so far he's just been, you know, he's made some good plays, but he hasn't been as consistent as he was at the beginning of the season. And then Daniel Jones, he's had a good couple of games, yeah, but I mean, do any of us really believe that Daniel Jones is going to be the starting quarterback of the Giants next year? I mean, I feel like that ship has sailed for them. I mean, if they hang on to him, more power to him. I mean, I don't think Daniel Jones is that good of a quarterback. I just think he's a product of this new system with a new coach. And who knows what's going to happen in the future for them. But I just kind of feel like Philly is going to come out strong in this one. They are getting a lot of their injured players back in this game. And while they didn't come into the playoffs really strong, which doesn't bode well for you. I mean, there's been a lot of number one seeds to come in the way that the Eagles did, and they usually lay an egg. And like I said, this is a division matchup, so I feel like if there's any upset that's going to happen this weekend, it would be this one. But I'm taking the Eagles 24-20 just because I do think they are the better team. But I do think the Giants are going to make it a good game. And I've got the Eagles moving on to the NFC Championship game. Then the first game on Sunday is the Cincinnati Bengals at the Buffalo Bills. Right now the Bills are a 4.5-point favorite. And I just feel like the Bengals' offensive line, it's had their issues all season, and they've pretty much been able to overcome them for the most part. But the last couple of weeks, you could tell that it's going to come back and haunt them at some point, and I feel like this is going to be that game. The injuries are piling up on the offensive line, and then also their ground attack has been suffering from it as well. I mean, Joe Mixon and Samaje Perine, neither one of them has been able to do anything the last couple of games, and I feel like that's going to cost them. You know, Joe Burrow's been able to, do what he can to keep getting the wins in this one, but I just feel like this offensive line is now starting to fall apart. Defensively, they're still pretty damn good, but I don't know if they're going to be able to hold it down if they're out on the field way too much. And that's kind of what I feel like is going to happen, is that the Buffalo defense is going to clamp down. They're going to take care of business. I do expect it to be a close game because these are two of the best teams in the AFC. And they're both really solid teams. But I feel like the Buffalo Bills are going to take advantage. I feel like their defense is going to cause multiple three and outs and quick drives for the Bengals. And then in turn, their defense is going to have to come out. And I feel like the Buffalo offense is going to do just enough to get the job done. And I think the Buffalo Bills are going to get a close win, 27-24. And then, of course, rounding out the divisional round playoffs, we have my Dallas Cowboys at the San Francisco 49ers. It's like it's the 90s all over again, y'all. San Francisco's favored by 3.5 points right now. And I am so looking forward to this game, because it's different than even last year's matchup, because last year's matchup, you know, the Cowboys, they were still on shaky ground. The Niners weren't even as solid as they were right now, but both of these teams are basically the exact same team. The top two defenses in the league. You've got Micah Parsons with the Dallas Cowboys. You've got Nick Bosa with the San Francisco 49ers, who I expect both of these dudes to have fucking fantastic days. But they're just both, they could get at the quarterback, but they can also cause turnovers and score touchdowns on those turnovers. But then offensively, they have a shit ton of playmakers. You've got the Cowboys with the stacked-ass offensive line. You've got Tony Pollard. You've got C.D. Lamb. You've got Dalton Schultz. And then turning over to the San Francisco 49ers. They have a stacked-ass offensive line. They've got Debo Samuel. They've got Christian McCaffrey. They've got George Kittle. So they've got a shit ton of weapons too. I feel like, though, the edge in this matchup is going to be with the Dallas Cowboys at the quarterback position with Dak Prescott. Because while Brock Purdy has had a fantastic season for the 49ers, he has held it down, as I continue to say, he should be their starting quarterback from here on out. But the dude is going to have his bad game, and that bad game is going to come this week. And I feel like Dak is going to continue what he did last week and carry it over into this week and have yet another good game. And I feel like Brock Purdy is going to have a few mistakes, and I feel like the Cowboys will capitalize on those few mistakes, and I think it's going to be a close one. And also, I feel like not only is it going to be a close one, but I feel like the game-winning points in this game are going to come from kicker Brett Maher, who had a horrible game last week. I feel like it's going to come down to him, where it might be one of those last second drives where it's going to come down to a field goal. And I think Brett Maher is going to kick the game-winning field goal. And the Dallas Cowboys, I have them going into the NFC Championship game, beating the San Francisco 49ers 31-28. As I said, I feel like it's just going to be a great game. I'm feeling good as a Cowboys fan. One thing I love too, the 49ers have been talking a little bit of shit this week. You know, Nick Bosa had the audacity to say that the San Francisco 49ers are America's team. Wrong. As I said and stated last week, y'all motherfuckers, were the Niners games the top five most watched football games this season. Oh, that's right. They weren't even anywhere in the top five, but the Cowboys games were 4 out of 5 of them. So just remember that. So Nick Bosa said that. Then also earlier this week, the Niners were kind of jabbing that the Cowboys were talking about how they had to play on Monday Night Football, and so they have less time prep time than the Niners do, and they were kind of jabbing at them at that. And I love it because the Cowboys aren't taking the bait. The Cowboys aren't talking shit. The Cowboys are actually saying, hey, you know, they are a damn good team. We're not going to overlook them. Even Micah Parsons was saying, hey, I'm just going to go out and play my game. And so I'm loving the vibe of the Cowboys. And so I just feel good about this game. And I think it's just going to be a classic 1992 type of game where the Cowboys move on to the NFC Championship game. So we'll see. We'll see. I'm feeling good, though, as a Cowboys fan. I was feeling good on Monday, and I'm still feeling damn good today. So we'll see where we're at come Monday. We did have a little bit of rumblings in the NBA this week. Some damn good games from some damn good players. And then just basically every day this week, we had something going on. Beginning with Monday, Jason freaking Tatum just continues his reign of terror. He dropped 51 points went 15 of 23 for shooting, 9 rebounds and 5 assists in a Boston Celtics massacre of the Charlotte Hornets, 130 to 118. But yeah, Tatum dropping 51 points. This guy is just raining from the sky. He is just killing it this year. And really making it difficult. And right now, the Celtics are on a nice little winning streak, too. They're getting back to that Celtic championship basketball. Then also on Monday, Steph Curry. He is back and better than ever from that injury. He dropped 41 points and 7 rebounds and 2 assists in a Golden State Warriors win over the Washington Wizards, 127 to 118. So Steph Curry is back. And the Warriors not having that great of a season so far. But they're still hanging around there, and with the Curry coming back, they're starting to look a lot better. Then on Tuesday night, Joel Embiid had a phenomenal night. He dropped 41 points, 9 rebounds, and 3 assists in a Philadelphia 76ers win over the Los Angeles Clippers, 120 to 110. So the 76ers just continue their reign. And then on Wednesday, Nikola Jokic, you know, the 2-time MVP. He had yet another triple-double, 31 points, 13 assists, 11 rebounds in a Denver Nuggets win over the Minnesota Timberwolves, 122 to 118. The dude is averaging a triple-double a game this season. The last time that happened was when Russell Westbrook did it a few years ago when he played for the Oklahoma City Thunder. But man, Jokic is just knocking it out the park. And not only is he averaging a triple-double on the season, but also that night, he became the Denver Nuggets all-time rebound leader. So the guy is just money, and he's just killing it and just having a fucking fantastic season right there with Tatum and Embiid. I mean, those are probably the top picks, I would say, for MVP right now at this point. I mean, there's a few other dudes. I mean, there's actually quite a few you could mention. But those three right there had a solid week, and averaging a triple-double per game right now is just insane. And, I mean, the Denver Nuggets, they're on a huge win streak right now as well. So these guys are just killing it. And then last night, Boston Celtics got a big win over Golden State, 121 to 118 in overtime. Jason Tatum had yet another fantastic game. He got his team into overtime and then led his team to the overtime win over the team that beat them last year in the NBA Finals. So it must have felt pretty good for them to get that win. It was a regular season win, but hey, you always want to beat them. And like I said, Steph Curry is back. So this was a good team they beat, not an injury-riddled Golden State Warriors team. All right, and then since it is the divisional round matchups this week, and I did mention that I'm kind of feeling like if there's going to be an upset this week, because the Cowboys beating the 49ers, a lot of people are calling that an upset. That is not an upset. If the Cowboys beat the Niners, as I said, those two teams balance out equally. One thing I want to take it back to with that game is a lot of people are hung up on the 49ers and their win streak right now, which, yeah, 11 games is fucking fantastic. But this team also lost to the Atlanta Falcons at some point in the season. They weren't fucking perfect this year, even though we like to act like the 49ers are the most perfect team to ever fucking play football, and Brock Purdy's the greatest thing to ever happen to the league since Dan fucking Marino. Fuck off. Dan Marino didn't win shit, number one. And number two, he's still a rookie. So let's not act like the Cowboys beating the 49ers would actually be an upset. It wouldn't. The Niners are only favored by 3.5. But if the Giants beat the Eagles, that is an upset because the Eagles are the number one overall seed. They dominated the regular season, and they're a 7.5-point favorite going into the game. So if the Eagles lose, that is an upset. If the Chiefs lose, that to the Jaguars, that is an upset. And so speaking of upsets, this week's Top 5 list is the Top 5 Divisional Round Upsets. There's a few of them. I did my research, and it was difficult to whittle them down, but number one to me is completely overwhelming. One of my favorite games of all time, too, by the way. Cowboys are not anywhere actually in this list, and then there actually is one team who was known for choking, and they are in here twice. It was a fun, interesting stroll down memory lane. But these are the top five divisional round upsets. Beginning with number five, back in 2008 NFC divisional round matchup was between the Arizona Cardinals, the number four seed. They came into the playoffs with a 9-7 record at the number two seeded Carolina Panthers, who came into this season with a 12-4 record. And the Panthers were arguably one of the best teams not only in the NFC, but in the league that year. And the Cardinals backed their way into the playoffs. They actually did win their division with a 9-7 record. And this Arizona Cardinals team, oddly enough, did go on to play in the Super Bowl because this game, actually, it was just complete domination. This Arizona Cardinals team on their roster, they had Kurt Warner as their quarterback. You know, Larry Fitzgerald had one of the greatest playoff runs for a wide receiver during this 2008 playoff run that the Arizona Cardinals would have. Like, he made so many game-changing plays in, I think, every single game he played in this one. It was just, that's what I remember. Like, this was a fantastic Super Bowl in 2008 between the Cardinals and the Steelers, even though we're not talking about that game. But Larry Fitzgerald, just, I remember every game. It was like, this guy's a freak. And he just would make some of the most insane plays, and this was the height of Larry Fitzgerald owning this league as a wide receiver. So I just loved what he did during this playoff run. But this game, he had a phenomenal game as well. And then their running back was Edgerrin James. And then turning to the Panthers side, this was when Jake Delhomme was their quarterback. Steve Smith, fantastic fucking wide receiver as well. He was their top guy. And then also Muhsin Muhammad, another fantastic wide receiver for the Panthers. So that was kind of what was going on with those rosters. But it was crazy because the Cardinals just dominated this game against the Panthers in Carolina. You know, Carolina was heavily favored going into this one because, you know, the Cardinals, like I said, they just backed their way into the playoffs. They just got in. I think they got into the playoffs on the last week of the season. They were a 9-7 team, so nobody expected them to do shit, and they just dominated the Panthers 33-13. As I said, they would go on to play in the Super Bowl, and this was the Super Bowl that Santonio Holmes would just have that, Ben Roethlisberger would drive him down the field. Like, as I said, the drive before, Larry Fitzgerald made the play of the game where he just had this beautiful catch right up the middle, would score a touchdown, give the Arizona Cardinals a lead with 2 minutes left to go. And then Ben Roethlisberger would drive the Steelers all the way down the field and just, boom, make this beautiful pass to Santonio Holmes in the Super Bowl, and they would go on to win the Super Bowl. But this was a phenomenal run for the Cardinals. As I said, Larry Fitzgerald, one of the most memorable seasons for just a player individually to have. He just was such a game changer in every single game, including that Super Bowl. Made what would have been the game-changing play for the Cardinals had Ben Roethlisberger and Santonio Holmes not did what they did on the last drive of the game. But this was a huge upset from the Cardinals against the Panthers because the Panthers were one of the most dominating teams that season. Then at number four on my top five divisional round upsets was the 2007 AFC divisional round matchup between the number three, 11-5 San Diego Chargers at the number two seed and 13-3 Indianapolis Colts. Now, this was the season where the Colts were actually the defending Super Bowl champions. And the Colts did what I always harp against, and that is when you're dominating the season, you sit your players, your starting players in the last game or two, and that's actually what the Colts did, and they laid a stinker in this this matchup against the Chargers. Now, it was a close matchup. The Chargers did end up getting the win 28-24. This Chargers team had Phillip Rivers at quarterback, LaDainian Tomlinson at running back. I believe this was an MVP season for Tomlinson. And then Antonio Gates at the tight end position. This Colts team had, of course, Peyton Manning at quarterback, Marvin Harrison at wide receiver, Reggie Wayne at wide receiver. This was one of the top offenses in the league. And this was a powerhouse matchup between two really solid, good teams. But the Colts, they just did what the Colts did in this era is they only got one Super Bowl in this era because, as I said, they did that stupid thing where they would sit Peyton Manning down for like the last game or two of the season, regular season, and they would come in cold into the postseason games. And usually what would happen is either they would start off the beginning of the game cold and they would just work their way into it way too late, or they would just get completely blown out. And in this matchup, it was a close matchup. It was back and forth most of the way. And actually, this San Diego Chargers defense, I don't know if y'all remember this defense, but I do. And this had Sean Merriman. I don't know if y'all remember that dude, but he was a motherfucking beast linebacker. And this was a damn good Chargers defense. And they actually ended up making two huge fourth down stops against the number one offense in the league. And two consecutive fourth down stops, like I said, to go on and get the win, 28-24. And they would ultimately lose to the New England Patriots in the following round. Then at number three on my top five divisional round upsets, I have the 1987 NFC divisional round matchup between the number five Minnesota Vikings, who came in with an 8-7 record, at the number one San Francisco 49ers, who came in with a 13-2 record. And this San Francisco 49ers team was a juggernaut team. This had Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, Ronnie Lott, and just that insanity of a team. I mean, this was easily the Super Bowl favorite. The Vikings backed their asses into the playoffs. Their players to be boasted about in this game were Wade Wilson and wide receiver Anthony Carter. Yes, you heard that right. Wade Wilson, who would ultimately go on to become a Dallas Cowboys backup for Troy Aikman at one point. But yeah, so this was a huge upset. Because not only did Minnesota win this game, but Minnesota kicked the crap out of the San Francisco 49ers. Minnesota actually led at halftime 20-3. And at some point in the second half, I believe it was the end of the third quarter, beginning of the fourth quarter, they would actually replace Joe Montana with Steve Young in this game. Yeah, that's right. Joe Montana was benched for Steve Young in this game. And the Vikings would ultimately go on to win 36-24. It is literally one of the biggest upsets of all time, just because the Niners were such a dominating team and the Vikings were such a loser trash team. And as I said, wide receiver Anthony Carter, he was the big player in this game. He had 227 receiving yards, which at that time was a playoff record. So, yeah, it's crazy how that happened. Now the 49ers would ultimately go on to win the next two Super Bowls after that. But, this was one of the biggest upsets in playoff history at the time. Then at number two on my top five divisional round upsets, I have the 1996 AFC divisional round matchup between the number five Jacksonville Jaguars at 9-7 at the number one seeded Denver Broncos, who were 13-3. This team was the Super Bowl pick all season long, from the beginning of the season all the way throughout the season. This Broncos team was so dominating, it was nuts. And the Jaguars would go on and get the win in this one, 30-27. This Jaguars team had Mark Brunell, Natron Means, and Jimmy Smith at wide receiver. But this Broncos team would have John Elway, Terrell Davis, and Shannon Sharp, all Hall of Famers. This Denver team was just lights out. And they started out the game with the 12-0 lead, but then in the second quarter, the Jaguars would just get it going. And then they took the lead, and they would keep the lead. The Broncos just kept treading water for the rest of the game. But really, it was the Jaguars dominating this game for the most part. And it was just really shocking. Now, of course, the Broncos would go on to win two Super Bowls after this loss. But this was a huge, huge upset because this Broncos team was dominating. And at the time, the Jaguars, what? I think they were a new team in 95. So, this was their second season in the league. And if I recall, the Panthers kind of went on their own little run this same year as well in 96, just because I seem to recall that both of those teams, they came into the league at the same time in 95. And then just magically, they both made these big playoff runs in 96, and I believe. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure that happened with the Panthers as well. But the Jaguars got the big upset over the Broncos. And then number one on my top five divisional round upsets, it is the number six seeded Pittsburgh. It's the 2005 AFC divisional round matchup between the number six seeded Pittsburgh Steelers, who were 11-5, at the number one seeded Colts, who were 14-2. As I said, the Colts were known for choking at this time. And part of the reason why is because they would sit their fucking players before the regular season because they'd get such a big win. This team, as a matter of fact, came into the postseason with a 13-game winning streak. And they are the only team to come in with a 13-game winning streak and lose in their first playoff matchup. So congratulations, Colts. That was a great record to accomplish. Now, this Pittsburgh Steelers team, they backed their way into the playoffs. As a matter of fact, they were 7-5, I believe, at what, like week 12? They would go on this immaculate winning streak all the way to the Super Bowl. And that's why this is number one, because for one, they backed their way into the playoffs. They got the last seed in the playoffs, the number six seed. This was the first time ever that a number six seed beat a number one seed. This Colts team, this offense was one of the most prolific offenses, not of just the 2005 season, but of the of football, of NFL's existence. This Colts team offense was pro-fucking-lific, and they laid an egg in this game. So this Steelers team had Ben Roethlisberger at quarterback, Jerome Bettis at running back. This was actually, Bettis said this was going to be his last season. So their rally towards the end of the season is, we want to get the Super Bowl for Jerome. And because the Super Bowl was in Detroit that year as well, and Jerome Bettis grew up in Detroit. And then also they had Hines Ward on this team as well, wide receiver. And then, of course, this Colts team had Peyton Manning, Edgerrin James, Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne. So this was an amazing Colts team. But they really came out and laid an egg, and the Pittsburgh Steelers actually dominated this game. They came out to, I believe they had a 13-0 lead, 14-0 lead. Indy would kind of hang around, and then eventually in the fourth quarter, they would rally off for 15 points. But the Steelers had a 21-18 lead at one point in the game. And they're driving, and it looks like they're going to take just a really nice, solid lead up against the Colts. Because as I said, the Colts went off in the fourth quarter for 15 points. And when the Colts do that, you gotta make sure you don't give Peyton Manning that ball back, because there's a good chance that dude's going to get the win, because he just was very cold-blooded, and the Colts could score at in seconds. They were very similar to how the Chiefs are these days, where you could just, anything's up for grabs with this kind of offense. So the Steelers, they were driving, and it looked like they were about to score a touchdown and just really get a nice, solid lead on the Colts. They are at the Colts' one-yard line, and, you know, Jerome Bettis is money at the one-yard line. It was almost, I feel like 99.999% of the time you give Jerome Bettis the ball at the goal line, he is going in for a touchdown. So Steelers are at the 1 yard line. Hand the ball off to Jerome Bettis and boom! Fumble. Jerome Bettis fumbles the football. And Nick Harper of the Indianapolis Colts picks up this football. And he is running for daylight. And there is one player left to tackle him. And if this one player does not tackle him, Nick Harper runs in for a touchdown and gives the Colts a big, big lead with not much time left on the clock. Well, Big Ben Roethlisberger makes probably one of the biggest plays of his Hall of Fame career. This, I believe, is Ben's third season in the league. And he's back there. He's running backwards. And Ben is not a fast quarterback. You know, he was athletic, but he was no Lamar Jackson, one of these fast motherfuckers. He was pretty big, too. And Ben Roethlisberger makes the biggest fucking play you could make. And he just, as he's falling, he grabs Nick Harper's foot and tumbles Nick Harper down to the ground. And they're still in good field position. They're still within range because, you know, the Colts have Mike Vanderjagt as their kicker. And at this time, Vanderjagt was one of the best kickers in the league, too. Money kicker. So the Colts got pretty good field position. I think they're at like the 40-ish, the 35-ish in that area. They play it kind of safe. Peyton Manning tries to do a couple of quick passes, but nothing really happens. And so they start running clock out and set Vanderjagt up in a pretty decent field goal position. I don't recall the exact field goal position, but I want to say it was about 40-ish yards, maybe a little bit closer. But it was within his range. Well, he kicks the field goal, and it's a miss. And the Pittsburgh Steelers would go on to win this game, 21-18. And they would ultimately go on to win the Super Bowl and send Jerome Bettis off into the sunset. He would retire as a Super Bowl champion. That was the one thing he never got. But that's why this game is number one, because it just has everything in it. Because, you know, the Colts, 14-2, hottest team in the league, 13-game winning streak. Pittsburgh Steelers back their way into the playoffs. No number six seed has ever beat a number one seed ever, ever, ever. That can't ever fucking happen. And, you know, we're in Indianapolis. You know, there's no way this team's going to do anything. And the Steelers not only got this win against a great team, but they would go on and win the Super Bowl ultimately. So I felt like that game had everything. I mean, I know that 87 game where the Niners lost, that was a huge upset just because the Vikings were just a trash can ass team that year. But at the same time, they didn't go on and win the Super Bowl, whereas this one did. And then also just the way this game ended, it was crazy to see Jerome Bettis, of all players, just fumble right at the goal line. And you could just see it like it was in slow motion. The ball just, da 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 da, oh my God, we're going to lose. And then it's like, Ben Roethlisberger, just get him. And he just makes the biggest play. And boom, that's just playoff football, man. It's just so much fun to watch. And I remember all of those except the 87 one, of course, because I was only 2 years old at the time. So I do not remember that one. But the other four, I remember them all. And those were all great games. And I am looking forward to this weekend's divisional matchup. Oh, looking forward to it. Dallas Cowboys, San Francisco 49ers. That's just gives you all the feels. Well, at least if you're a Cowboys or Niners fan, it gives us all the feels. Especially Cowboys fans, because we haven't had shit to cheer for in forever. And finally, this looks like a legit team with a legit matchup. And I know all the haters, they want to laugh in our faces so bad. And they might get that chance to laugh in our face. But you know what, motherfuckers? We are going to be so goddamn obnoxious if we're headed to this NFC Championship game. So look out for it on Monday, y'all. It's either going to be obnoxious trap or god fucking damn motherfucking fuck you, Trop. So we'll see what happens with this weekend's matchups. But how about them Cowboys, y'all? How about them Cowboys? Oh, I'm so ready for this matchup. So y'all enjoy this great weekend of football and go Cowboys!